to her late husband, so yes, Lorena's known him all her life. Edgar raised his eyebrows. I see what you mean, darling. It seems jolly cold to turf someone out after all these years, retirement or no retirement. Kitty's mind was busy while she finished her tea and cleared away the tray. Are there any pawn shops near here? She asked, as she took her seat again beside Matt.
One or two? There's one a couple of blocks away, not far from Lorena and Rudolph's apartment, and there's one further over at the far end of the park, near the intersection by the business.
Edgar tailed off and eyed Kitty. She assumed an innocent expression and decided not to press her father on his intimate knowledge of where all the pawn shops were located. She knew he had probably made use of all of them at some point.
Why are you asking? Edgar said.
Oh, I was just wondering where someone might have gone with those things of Nora's if we were right and they had been pawned, Kitty said.
Now, Kitty, you listen to me, my dear. These New York policemen are not like the policemen back at home. They will not be happy to have any kind of interference in their cases, Edgar warned.
I wouldn't dream of interfering, Kitty demurred. I was simply curious.
Matt looked at her over the top of the New York Post newspaper that he had borrowed from Edgar.
I hate to say it, darling, but your father is right. We can't interfere with the investigation into Nora's death.
I wouldn't dream of suggesting we interfere, Kitty said virtuously. But perhaps a stroll in that direction tomorrow might be interesting.
She waited, hopefully, to see if Matt or Edgar would agree. Surely anything they discovered might assist the police and help ensure that Edgar was not going to be somehow dragged into the investigation simply because of his somewhat shady past.
We'll see what happens in the morning, Matt said,
and Kitty was compelled to accept this rather unsatisfactory reply.
Chapter 8.
Matt woke early the next morning, unsure at first of what it was that had disturbed his sleep. He slid out from under the covers, taking care not to wake Kitty. The air in the room was cold, and he shivered as he tugged on his thick tartan fleece dressing gown and pushed his feet into leather slippers. The room was dark as he made his way out of the bedroom, closing the door quietly behind him. He paused in the hallway to listen again, to try and hear what had woken him. There was something definitely wrong. Above him, he heard a series of muffled thumps and thuds, as if something was being knocked over. He listened for a second longer, then picked up the key to Edgar's apartment from the painted ceramic Chinese-style dish on the hall stand. Without pausing to think twice, he let himself out of the apartment and headed across the landing to the stairwell that led up to the penthouse. His first thought was that someone was burgling the apartment. He crept quietly and quickly up the stairs, wondering if Peggy and Horatio were in the flat. Had they been attacked? Were they the ones stripping the place out? He reached the top of the stairs and peered out onto the dark landing. The only light was from the window at the far end, where dawn was breaking, offering him little more than moonlight to see by. Everything looked normal. The door to Nora's apartment was closed, and there was no sign of a forced entry. Matt listened again, but heard nothing. He had just started to believe it was all a bad dream and he had imagined it, when he heard a noise again from inside the apartment. It sounded like a muffled scream or moan of someone in pain. Matt hammered on the door of the apartment. Someone inside was in desperate trouble, he was sure of it. He hoped if someone had somehow forced their way into the apartment that they wouldn't be armed. After a moment, he heard the sound of the bolt being drawn back and the chain released. He found himself face to face with a bleary-eyed and confused-looking pyjama-clad Horatio Blackstock.
Captain Bryant?
The manservant asked in a bewildered tone.
I apologize for disturbing you, but I've heard dreadful noises coming from inside the apartment, so I had to check that you were all right.
Matt could see the man was not properly awake, and he guessed he must have been in such a deep sleep he hadn't heard the disturbance. Horatio opened the door a little wider and adjusted the belt on his dressing gown.
I took medication to make me sleep. I haven't heard anything until you knocked the door,
the man said. Just as he spoke, there was another crash from along the hall behind him.
That's Miss Peggy's room,
the man said, turning to head towards the girl's room. Matt followed in his wake as the manservant knocked on Peggy's bedroom door.
Miss Peggy, are you all right in there?
He tried the door handle when he got no reply. He jiggled it up and down futilely for a minute.
It's locked.
Stand clear.
Matt urged the older man to stand back as he applied his weight to the door. On the third attempt, the lock gave and the door opened. Horatio snapped on a light and they looked in horror at the scene before them. Everything from the top of Peggy's nightstand had been knocked onto the floor and the stand itself was tipped over. Her bedside lamp lay broken, the glass shade smashed to pieces. A bottle of what looked like tonic medicine and a glass were among the debris. The bedclothes were strewn around the bed, and Peggy herself was dead on top of the mattress. Her eyes were wide and staring, and her body contorted. Her dark pink nightdress was wrapped tightly around her body. Horatio went as if to step forward to cover her up, but Matt extended a hand to prevent him.
Go and telephone the police.
What's happened to her?
The manservant seemed unable to take his eyes from the horrific scene.
I'm afraid it looks very much to me as if she has ingested poison.
If Matt had to make an informed guess, he would have said it was strychnine. The girl's end had been painful and unpleasant as she had convulsed and thrashed about, wrecking her room as the poison had taken its effect. Horatio gulped and scurried down the hall to the sitting room, presumably to make the call. Matt made the most of the servant's absence to take a good look at the scene. He was careful not to disturb anything, but he wanted to see if he could discover how Peggy had taken the poison. The glass on the floor had obviously contained some kind of dark brown fluid, which he assumed must be the tonic that had spilled from the bottle, which was slowly dripping its viscous contents onto the Persian rug. There were various papers and a book on the floor amongst the mess. The papers looked like letters, and he peered more closely at them to see who they might be from. The spidery copperplate handwriting indicated they were from an older person, and it seemed, when he read part of one of the letters, that he was right. The author appeared to be talking about an old neighbour of Peggy's and asking if she was likely to visit soon.
The police are on their way, sir.
Horatio reappeared at the door of the bedroom.
We had better wait in the sitting room for them. There is nothing we can do for Peggy now,
Matt said, straightening back up. He accompanied the servant into the lounge, where Horatio had switched on one of the Chinese-style silk-shaded lamps. Matt could see the older man was trembling as he took a seat.
I don't understand. Why didn't I hear anything?
Horatio looked shaken.
Where is your room?
Matt asked.
Near the kitchenette. It's a box room. Miss Nora had a bell installed, so she could call me if she wanted anything, and I would be handy to make drinks or snacks for her,
the man said. That meant the man was sleeping on the far side of the apartment away from Peggy's room.
I think Peggy's room is directly above the guest room, where Kitty and I are staying, so the thud of the nightstand toppling is probably what disturbed me. You are on the other side of the drawing room, and you said you had taken a sleeping draught.
Matt looked at the man.
I don't use my medicine unless I'm unwell, but after Miss Nora's murder and Miss Lorena being so upset yesterday...
The man paused and shook his head in disbelief.
My mind couldn't settle.
When did you last see Peggy?
Matt asked.
Last night, before we went to bed, I had been finishing off clearing up the apartment, The police had been going through various things, and there was still some debris from the party. We had supper together, and then we had the radio on for a while.
Horatio's hands were still shaking, and he glanced towards Peggy's room, as if reliving the horror of their discovery.
What time was this?
Matt said. The manservant frowned.
I reckon it must have been about 11 when we turned in. Miss Lorena and Mr. Rudolph had been over with the police earlier, and then they stayed on a bit afterwards. Miss Lorena was very upset. After they had gone, Peggy and I had supper, then she went out for a spell. Said she had to post some letters. She came back about 8-ish, and we listened to the radio while we finished up some more tidying. She said she was tired, and I was too. It was a pretty rough day yesterday,
Horatio said.
And then you went to bed?
Matt confirmed. The man nodded.
I said I was going to take a sleeping draught, and Peggy said she hoped she would be able to sleep. There was some tonic in a bottle beside Peggy's bed.
Matt phrased the words carefully.
Yes, she had low iron, and she would usually take it at night. She wasn't the best at remembering it, so she would take it whenever she thought about it.
The man looked at Matt, his eyes widening.
You think she took it in her tonic?
Or someone poisoned her tonic,
Matt said grimly, just as a loud knock on the partially open door of the apartment announced the arrival of the police. Lieutenant Tanfield, looking slightly rumpled and sleepy-eyed, entered the room with two uniformed officers. He looked surprised to see Matt seated with Horatio.
Miss Marsh is dead. I believe she has ingested strychnine,
Matt said succinctly as he and the servant rose to greet the officers. The lieutenant's gaze sharpened.
I see. Show me.
Matt took the officers back along the hall to Peggy's room. Matt suspected Horatio was in no fit state to face the sight of Peggy's demise again.
We haven't touched anything. It was clear she was beyond help when we found her.
Matt stood back, and the police entered the room. He slipped away to leave them to their task, rejoining Horatio in the drawing room until they were needed.
Perhaps the officers would welcome some coffee, Matt suggested to the manservant.
He could see the man was upset and restless. Perhaps going about some of his normal duties might help him to settle.
That's a good idea, sir. I'll go and make a pot.
The man went off to the kitchenette. By the time he returned, bearing a tray with coffee, cups and saucers, more police had arrived, and the hall of the apartment was a hive of activity. Lieutenant Tanfield came to join them and accepted Horatio's offer of coffee.
Now, perhaps you two could shed some light on what's happened and how you came to discover Miss Marsh. I see the bedroom door lock has been busted off.
Matt explained how he had come to the apartment after being woken by the strange noises and the actions he and Horatio had taken.
I guess that explains the pajamas,
the policeman said in a wry tone as he made his notes in between sips of coffee.
I take it Peggy's death was due to strychnine?
Matt asked. The lieutenant glanced sharply at him.
Our doctor will confirm that, but yes, I'd say you were on the money with that idea.
I didn't see a suicide note, Matt said.
The policeman stopped writing and tapped his pen thoughtfully on the corner page of his notebook.
I guess you didn't,
he said.
Why would Peggy want to kill herself, and in such a terrible way? That doesn't make a lick of sense,
Horatio said. He seemed more alert since he had drunk some of the coffee.
She didn't seem distressed or upset when you said goodnight to her?
The lieutenant asked. The servant shook his head.
No, sir. She had been upset earlier when Miss Lorena gave us our notices, but she seemed to have calmed down. After she came back from the post, she seemed almost cheerful. I thought she must have been thinking about getting fixed up in a new situation. She was smart,
and pretty, so she wouldn't have struggled for a new job,
Horatio said.
Mrs. Briggs gave you both notice?
The policeman asked.
She was mighty upset about her mother's death. She wasn't thinking quite right, so she said a few things which were uncalled for.
Horatio's tone had shifted slightly, and Matt could see the man was still angered by what had been said.
And what sort of things did Mrs. Briggs say?
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
She implied Peggy was dishonest and that I had colluded with her. Miss Nora had mislaid some things recently, and she had told Miss Lorena some items were missing. With the party preparations, though, and all the entertaining Miss Nora did, I'm sure there wasn't really a problem. Things would get moved around.
Horatio's voice rose slightly.
I understand that Mrs. Dangerfield had suggested you retire from her service, the policeman said. I presume Mrs. Briggs agreed with her mother? She did suggest that, but I have worked for Miss Nora and her family for almost all my working life. I can't afford to retire, and I have no wish to do so. I had hoped Miss Lorena would keep me on.
Horatio stiffened.
You were going to seek new employment if she didn't?
Matt asked. He wondered what the servant had done with the money he had earned over the years. He assumed the man had never married, and his bed and board had always been provided. Even on a modest salary, he must have some savings.
That is correct, sir, yes,
Horatio said.
I don't suppose you know who Miss Marsh's letters were written to?
The policeman asked.
The ones she went to post? No, sir, she didn't say. She wrote to her brother pretty regular, though.
Horatio appeared to have calmed down again.
I see, thank you. I'm afraid we shall be here for a while longer. Captain Bryant, thank you for your assistance. I expect you will want to return to your father-in-law's apartment. Your wife will wake up and wonder where the heck you've gone.
Lieutenant Tanfield returned his notebook to his pocket.
I'm sure she will. Kitty is usually an early riser. She'll be very upset to hear about Miss Marsh, as indeed will my father-in-law.
Matt stood ready to leave. The policeman accompanied him along the hall, past the hustle and bustle inside Peggy's room. They paused out on the landing outside the front door of Nora's apartment. More light was coming through the window now, and the sky between the buildings was streaked with pink and gold.
Something did cross our minds yesterday afternoon, Lieutenant. Kitty and I had a case not long ago where items disappeared and were then returned. It turned out the son of the house gambled and would pawn items, retrieving them if he won, and if he didn't, they stayed lost.
Matt spoke a little diffidently. He wasn't certain how the policeman would take his hint. Lieutenant Tanfield scratched his chin.
You think that may be what's happened here? This tale of pieces of silver going missing, then turning up someplace else later on? I just thought I should mention it as a possibility. My father-in-law said there were a couple of pawnbrokers not far from here. It could be the items are linked to the murders,
Matt said. The policeman eyed him with a keen gaze.
I see you said murders, Captain Bryant. You don't buy suicide for Miss Marsh's death.
No, and I don't think you do either, Lieutenant. There was no note, no sign of her putting something in her tonic, and why wait till the middle of the night to do such a thing? I think her tonic was tampered with. She woke for some reason, realized she had forgotten to take her medicine, took it, and suffered the consequences,
Matt said.
That's a theory, the policeman said. I'll bear it in mind, and I'll be in touch later today if I have more questions.
Matt nodded and shook the man's hand before heading back downstairs to Edgar's apartment. He had scarcely let himself in and closed the front door when Kitty appeared in the hall. She had her dressing gown on, and her blonde curls were ruffled from sleep.
Where have you been? I was worried sick, she said.
Her hands on her hips, once she realized that on this occasion at least, he had not been sleepwalking. Chapter 9. Kitty had woken with a start and realized the space in the bed beside her was empty and cold. She had lain quietly for a moment, aware of strange, muffled noises in the apartment above them. For a second, she had panicked. Matt was prone to sleepwalking, a legacy from his time in the Great War. He would suffer from dreadful nightmares and would often destroy things or roam around the house while still in a deep sleep. These incidents had gradually become less frequent, but times of stress or being in a strange place could trigger them. She sat bolt upright and shivered at the cold air in the room. She hopped out of bed and tugged on her dressing gown. She needed to find Matt and make sure he was safe. He could have let himself out of the apartment without being aware of his surroundings. If that was the case, she needed to locate him quickly. She pushed her feet into her slippers and heard the sound of a key in the front door. Opening the bedroom door, she peered out and saw Matt re-enter the apartment. From the sheepish and guilty look on her husband's face as he returned the apartment keys to the bowl on the hall stand, she realized this was not one of those events where he had been sleepwalking. "Where have you been? What's going on?" She kept her voice low so as not to wake her father, who preferred to rise later in the day. Overhead, she could still hear strange noises coming from Nora's apartment.
"Let's get some tea and I'll tell you," Matt suggested.
Kitty followed him into the drawing room and he disappeared to go and make some tea while Kitty turned on the fire to take the chill off the room. Once he had returned, he took a seat on the sofa next to her.
"Peggy Marsh is dead from strychnine poisoning," Matt said as she poured them both a drink.
"What happened?" Kitty asked. She listened, horrified, as Matt explained what had gone on and why he had headed up to the penthouse apartment. "Good heavens, how terrible!" Kitty stared at him. "I can't believe it! Poor Peggy! Poor Mr. Blackstock, too. He must have been dreadfully upset to find you banging on the front door. Then to discover Peggy in such an awful way." She could scarcely believe her ears. She was even more annoyed that she had slept through the whole thing. Matt told her what he had learned from the scene in the bedroom and from his conversation with Horatio. "Well, I did overhear what Lorena said to them both yesterday." Kitty frowned. "It was quite nasty and must have been awfully upsetting for both of them."
"Indeed. Horatio was quite frank with the police about what Lorena had said. I shared with the lieutenant our thoughts on the pawn shop theory. I felt I should, since it might have some relevance on the case," Matt said.
"Yes, I would have done the same. Horatio Blackstock is bound to come under more suspicion now, though, isn't he?" Kitty's frown deepened. "He'll be seen to have means and opportunity, I suppose, for killing both Nora and Peggy."
"Yes, although the motive part is rather weak. He could have been angry at Nora for wishing him to take retirement. And he told Lieutenant Tanfield he couldn't afford to retire. He could possibly have been the one taking the items," Matt said.
"And Nora found out, followed him downstairs, and he strangled her. Then Peggy guessed it had to be him, and he killed her too?" Kitty suggested.
"It's a possibility. But Horatio definitely looked to me like a man who had been in a deep sleep when he opened the door. I could perhaps see him committing a murder in the heat of the moment, but to tamper with Peggy's tonic and then calmly take a sleeping draught himself and go to bed."
Matt paused and looked at Kitty. "Yes, that would be quite something, wouldn't it?" She agreed. "I suppose anyone who knew Peggy might know of her habit regarding her medicine. The strychnine could have been added to the bottle at any point by anyone who had access to it. It could even have been done during the party." Kitty shivered at the thought.
"That's very true. I can't see Peggy's death being suicide. She would have left a note and chosen something that was less unpleasant, surely, if that was the case."
No, this has all the hallmarks of murder,
Matt said. It's a very worrying idea, Kitty agreed.
Matt finished his tea and put his cup down on the tray before raising his hand in an attempt to stifle a yawn.
Perhaps you should go back to bed for a while, try and catch up on your sleep for an hour or two, Kitty suggested.
I think I might,
he said, getting up from his seat. He dropped an affectionate kiss on her head and went back to the bedroom. Kitty tidied up their cups and carried them off to the kitchenette to wash them up. She felt too restless to join Matt in catching an extra 40 winks. The noises from the penthouse apartment seemed to have stopped, and Kitty assumed that the police must probably be finishing their work in Peggy's bedroom. From Matt's description, it sounded as if the poor girl had suffered a horrific and painful death. As she dried the cups on a linen tea cloth, she tried to recall anything from the party that had seemed unusual or out of place. Anything at all that might indicate who could have wanted Nora and Peggy dead. There had been one moment when she had glimpsed Peggy with Lorena's husband, Rudolph, looking quite intimate together, partly concealed by the giant Christmas tree. Was there something there? Was that why Lorena was so eager to dismiss Peggy? The story of the missing items could be a smokescreen. Lorena could have been the one behind it to get her mother to dismiss Peggy. Kitty thought Rudolph had certainly seemed to have a bit of a wandering eye for the ladies. He had made her feel a little uncomfortable when Nora had made the introductions. She put the clean, dry cups back ready on the tray and rinsed out the teapot so it would be ready for use when Matt and her father roused themselves. Then there was this business of Mortimer and Nora's affair. Mortimer and Titania lived a couple of floors below Edgar's apartment. Mortimer had likely been a frequent visitor to the penthouse apartment. He would probably know about Peggy's habits with her medication, and by default, it was likely his wife would know that too. Either of them could also be responsible for Nora's murder. And also, she supposed, for Peggy's too. If Peggy had discovered that Mortimer or Titania had killed Nora, or if they thought she might have noticed something, then it would have been fairly easy for them to place strychnine in Peggy's tonic. She had no doubt that the tonic was the most likely source of the poison. Matt had said there was no other glass or cup on the fallen nightstand. The taste of the tonic would also have concealed any taste of the strychnine. Kitty wandered back into the sitting room and turned up the electric fire to try and dispel some more of the chill from the room. It still felt cool, and the heating had not yet come on. She had grown cold, dawdling over the washing up in the kitchenette. She amused herself by picking up and reading some of the Christmas cards her father had received and placed on display on the mantelpiece. An expensive-looking personalised card from Nora, a foiled card from Mortimer and Titania, a simple card from Lorena and Rudolph, and various others which Kitty assumed were from friends and neighbours. There was one from her aunt and uncle, and Kitty and Matt's own card, which had obviously preceded their arrival in New York. It was not many days now until Christmas, and she wondered if the lieutenant would have caught the murderer before the celebrations. She settled herself back down in her father's favourite chair near the fire and enjoyed the feel of the heat on her legs. She was careful to keep her night attire well clear of the bars on the fire. She had seen too many reports in the newspapers of people who had been badly burnt or killed by being too close to coal or electric fires.
Good morning, darling. Up early?
Her father appeared in the doorway, dressed in his pyjamas and dark red silk monogrammed dressing gown.
Good morning. You're an early riser too today. Shall I make some tea and toast? Kitty asked.
That would be marvellous. I say, are you all right, dear girl? You look a little pale this morning.
Her father peered at her with a concerned expression.
I'm afraid I have some more rather shocking news, Kitty said, and told him about Matt going up to the penthouse and the horrific discovery of Peggy's death.
Oh, I say, that's dreadful.
Her father sank down onto the end of the sofa, his face betraying his shock at the unexpected news. Matt thinks Peggy's death is murder rather than suicide. He suspects her medicine had been tampered with, Kitty said.
You mean that ghastly tonic stuff she took for her anemia? Edgar said.
You know about Peggy's medicine? Kitty asked in surprise.
Oh, yes. I think most people knew she took medication for her iron levels. She was prone to fainting if her iron dropped too low, and she was awful at remembering to take the wretched tonic. So whenever she would get lightheaded, Nora would scold her and make her take her tonic, Edgar explained.
I see. Kitty thought that answered her question about who might know of Peggy's habits with her tonic. From what her father had just said, it appeared half of New York society knew.
I can't believe it. Poor Peggy. Who would wish to harm her? Edgar asked.
I don't know. Was she generally well-liked? Kitty asked as she rose to go and put the kettle on.
I think so. She was a very inoffensive girl, Edgar called after her as she went inside the kitchenette.
No recent arguments you know of with anyone other than Lorena? Kitty stepped back into the room while she waited for the kettle to boil.
Obviously, Lorena must have believed Nora's tale of suspecting Peggy of stealing some of her things, but most of those things reappeared.
Edgar looked baffled. You don't think that perhaps it was Lorena herself moving things to try to get her mother to dismiss Peggy? Kitty suggested. She thought she might as well try her theory out on her father. He knew the people involved much better than she did. Edgar's eyes widened.
No. Well, actually, I suppose she could have. But why would she do something like that?
Kitty ducked back inside the kitchenette as she heard the kettle start to whistle. She emerged a moment later, bearing the tea tray.
I just wondered. Lorena's husband seemed to be very attentive towards Peggy at the party when they thought they were unobserved, Kitty said as she set down the tray.
Really? I wouldn't have thought Rudolph would have been so foolish to try his luck so close to home.
Edgar waited for Kitty to stir the tea in the pot before she set the metal strainer on top of the cup.
He seemed to have a wandering eye, I thought, when we first met him at the party.
Kitty replaced the lid of the teapot and poured the tea through the strainer.
Yes, you're quite right there. Lorena keeps him on a short leash. Still, the fellow knows which side his bread is buttered. I don't know that he would ever risk upsetting Lorena, and, more importantly, Nora. Nora funded his and Lorena's lifestyle. Dear Rudolph doesn't have a penny to bless himself with, even less than Mortimer, Edgar said, as he spooned sugar into his tea.
Really? So if Rudolph were having a bit of a fling with Peggy, then presumably he would be in big trouble if Nora found out, Kitty said.
I suppose so. I know he's strayed before. Lorena, I think, knew, but she was careful not to let her mother find out. Lorena adores Rudolph, and will do anything to keep him happy, even overlooking his, dalliances.
Edgar stirred his drink and rested the spoon on his saucer.
Did Nora ever find out about any of his flings? Kitty asked, settling back in her chair while balancing her own cup of tea in her hand.
Oh, yes, there was one huge blow-up about, let me think, yes, August time. Nora told me about it when they came back to town. It was while they were away on holiday in Hawaii. It was a bit of a scandal, as the girl, I can't recall her name, contacted Nora and said she was pregnant. Rudolph denied everything, of course, and Lorena swore black and blue that it was all a ploy to get money from the family.
Edgar took a sip of tea.
What happened in the end? Kitty asked.
She wondered if this meant there was someone else out there that they didn't know about who may have had a grudge against Nora.
I'm not quite certain, but I rather think Nora got her lawyers involved, and I believe the girl was paid off.
Edgar looked at Kitty.
After that, Lorena has kept a closer eye on her husband. The whole business upset her dreadfully. Nora, I think, would have urged Lorena to dump him like day-old soup if he even stepped a toe out of line again. She would do anything for Lorena to keep her happy. That was the only reason she put up with Rudolph's nonsense. Losing him would devastate Lorena.
Hmm. Kitty drank her tea and mulled over this new information.
I guess now Nora is dead, Lorena will be a wealthy woman, Edgar said.
And her husband? Does he get any of the money?
Kitty asked. She was aware that in most couples the man held the purse strings, regardless of who had brought the money into the marriage. However, she also knew of several wealthy women who had taken steps to ensure they would keep their money safe if the marriage didn't work out.
I don't think so. Nora and her husband were very shrewd people. I know Nora mentioned to me before that she had taken steps to secure Lorena's fortune. She opposed the marriage, but Lorena eloped, and since she was of age, Nora was forced to accept it.
Edgar finished his tea and set his cup down on the tray.
What about in a divorce? Kitty asked.
Same thing, I assume. She told me when they came back after that disastrous holiday that if Rudolph were to leave Lorena, he wouldn't see a single cent, Edgar said.
Kitty decided that from what her father had just told her, it sounded as if both Lorena and Rudolph might have motives for murdering Peggy and Nora. Lorena, to stop her mother from insisting she divorce Rudolph, and then getting rid of Peggy to ensure Rudolph was no longer tempted to stray. Rudolph could have killed his mother-in-law if she had discovered his fling with Peggy, and he wouldn't want to lose his comfortable lifestyle. Peggy may have been a fly in the ointment, so by getting rid of her, no one would be any the wiser about his affair. It would seem as if he too had a motive for murder. Matt strolled into the room, shaved and dressed for the day.
Any tea left in the pot?
He asked, after greeting his wife and father-in-law.
I'll make some more.
Kitty took the pot into the kitchen as Edgar started to ask Matt about Peggy. She wasn't sure if she was much further forward with trying to work out who could have killed Nora and Peggy and why. There seemed to be quite a few people who might all have motives and the opportunity. However, she was determined her father's name would be cleared of any suspicion.
Chapter 10. Kitty left her father and her husband to enjoy their tea while she went to her bedroom to dress for the day. She chose a pale blue cashmere twin set and a heavy heather-coloured tweed skirt from her wardrobe, along with some thick stockings. Outside the window, the sky was ominously grey, and it seemed that even more snow was likely. She had just finished patting her short blonde curls in place when someone pounded on the front door of the apartment. She opened the bedroom door in time to see Matt letting a distraught-looking Mortimer Liggett into the apartment hallway.
Is it true? Enrique the concierge just told me that Peggy Marsh is dead. I'd gone downstairs to ask if a parcel I was expecting had arrived, and the police were outside the building again. What's happened? Do you know?
Mortimer looked at Matt, then at Edgar, who had followed Matt into the hall.
I'm afraid it is true, old boy. Come through into the lounge. It's been the most dreadful shock for everybody, Edgar answered, leading the group back into the cosy comfort of the sitting room.
Kitty followed along behind them. Mortimer sank down on the end of the black leather sofa, his head in his hands.
I can't believe it. Peggy, do you know what happened?
He raised his head and looked up as Matt approached him with a tot of brandy in a crystal balloon glass.
Here,
You look as if you need a drink, Matt suggested, in a firm but kindly tone.
Mortimer took the glass obediently and took a sip.
Thank you. I just couldn't believe what he said. It's dreadful, especially so soon after our dear Nora. What is happening? Was it an accident or suicide? I know. We were horribly upset by it too.
Edgar looked at Matt.
My son-in-law and Horatio were the ones who found her.
Mortimer stared at Matt.
You and Horatio? How? When? Where?
He looked bewildered. Matt explained the circumstances which had taken him to the penthouse apartment a few hours earlier. Kitty watched as a series of expressions crossed Mortimer's pleasant but nondescript face. From astonishment, horror, and then concern.
Poison?
Mortimer squeaked before taking another slightly larger gulp of brandy.
I'm afraid so, my dear chap. Matt and Kitty are very experienced in these matters. They work as private investigators back home in Devon.
Edgar leaned back in his seat and looked at his friend.
Was it suicide? Did Peggy harm Nora and then take her own life?
Mortimer looked around at them all.
No doubt someone will hope that is believed to be what happened, but no, I rather fear that Peggy too has been murdered,
Matt said.
Good heavens!
It took a moment for the implications of what Matt had just said to seemingly sink in for Mortimer.
Two murders in just over 24 hours? Didn't Horatio see or hear anything? Is he under arrest? I mean, surely he must be involved,
Mortimer asked.
The police are investigating, I assume, but I doubt they have any reason to think Horatio is involved in either death. At least, he is probably no more a suspect than anyone else. In fact, he may even be at risk himself from whoever did this,
Matt suggested. This thought had crossed Kitty's mind too while she had been dressing. With Nora and Peggy both dead, Horatio might be next if the killer thought he posed a risk. Mortimer startled at this suggestion, his eyes agog.
Oh my, yes, I see what you mean. But why Peggy? Did she see something or suspect someone of murdering my dear Nora?
To Kitty's slight alarm, the man's voice wobbled, and he appeared to be dangerously on the brink of tears. She could understand that he and Nora had been conducting an affair, but the man was still married to Titania. Kitty decided she must be getting old. She was turning into Mrs. Craven. She could hear the older woman's voice in her head as she looked at Mortimer.
Deplorable behaviour.
I don't know. That will be a matter for Lieutenant Tanfield, I expect, Matt said.
Tanfield? He's the one who came to see me and Titania after, well, after Nora was killed.
Mortimer paused and looked at Matt.
You found Nora too, didn't you?
There was a hint of suspicion in his voice. Yes, it's not been the nicest of starts to our holiday, Kitty said in a crisp tone.
No, I suppose not, Mortimer mumbled, abashed at Kitty's response. Tanfield was very harsh towards Titania when he came to our apartment. He virtually accused her of killing Nora, Mortimer said.
Well, she did slug her at the party, dear boy. Everyone saw what happened, so she could hardly claim they were the best of chums,
Edgar pointed out.
Titania had had a little too much champagne. She was overwrought and not thinking straight. You know how she can be,
Mortimer said in a huffy tone. Kitty longed to say, and whose fault was that, but bit her tongue instead.
I expect the police will wish to see you again now Peggy is dead, Matt said.
Mortimer stared at him.
Whatever for? Why would we know anything about Peggy's death?
It's standard procedure, usually, you know, to find out where everyone was when she died. If you knew about her medication and had access to the penthouse, Kitty said. A dark plum colour mounted in Mortimer's cheeks, and he opened and closed his mouth like a goldfish gasping for air.
We were both asleep. Titania had taken a sleeping draught. She was so upset after Tanfield's questions, I had to call a doctor in to see her.
The poison could have been put in her tonic during the party, I suppose, or just afterwards, Matt mused.
The poison was in Peggy's medicine? Mortimer asked.
I know she took some kind of iron tonic. Nora used to have to remind her to take it. Everyone knows that.
Kitty exchanged a glance with Matt. And obviously you and Titania are familiar with the layout of Nora's apartment, she said. Mortimer swallowed the last of his brandy and placed his empty glass on the table.
Now, I do hope you're not implying that either I or Titania had anything to do with Peggy's death.
Kitty raised her hands in a gesture of defense.
I wouldn't dream of such a thing, but obviously the police will ask these kinds of questions.
Mortimer blinked.
Oh, of course, yes, I see, you're right. No, Titania will be dreadfully upset when she hears about Peggy.
The bluster had died from his voice.
Was Titania close to Peggy? Kitty asked.
Well, they would talk, you know, whenever Nora organized a dinner or something. Girlish gossip,
Mortimer said. Kitty thought his answer was unsatisfyingly vague.
Do you think the police will have let Lorena know about Peggy? Mortimer asked. It's her mother's apartment, after all, and she is still in Lorena's employ now, I suppose.
I expect they will want to talk to her and to her husband, Matt said.
Especially after Lorena dismissed Horatio and Peggy yesterday, Edgar added.
Mortimer goggled at Edgar.
Lorena fired Peggy? I mean, I know Nora had said Horatio needed to retire, which I wholeheartedly supported, but I would have thought Lorena would have kept Peggy on to deal with things for a while at least.
Did Nora ever say anything to you about suspecting either Peggy or Horatio of being dishonest? Kitty asked.
Well, she told me some things had been moved and others had gone missing. Nora had a lot of little fancy knick-knacks, silver snuff boxes and things. She would move them herself for parties and dinners or events. I didn't take too much notice. She did mention she thought Peggy had become careless,
Mortimer said.
It had really started to bug her.
And Horatio?
Matt asked.
He was past it, really. I mean, he'd been with Nora for ages. I always feel like he doesn't approve of me. He was a leftover from her marriage, always snooping about and quite obsequious, if you know what I mean.
Mortimer gave Matt a meaningful look.
Nora was going to let him go anyway in the new year.
The clock on the mantelpiece struck the hour, and Mortimer jumped to his feet.
I had better get back to Titania. She will wonder where I've been, and there'll be another row if she thinks I've been out someplace without her. I do hope that Lieutenant Tanfield won't be round upsetting her again. She's going to be distressed enough when I tell her about Peggy.
Edgar accompanied his unexpected guest from the room.
I'll see you out, dear boy. Do give our best to Titania. I'm sure the police will have this all wrapped up in the shake of a lamb's tail.
I wish I were as confident about the police capturing this killer as your father is, Matt murmured in a low voice once Edgar and Mortimer were in the hall out of earshot.
I know. The more we learn, the more horribly complicated it all seems. So many of them seem to have motives for killing Nora and Peggy, Kitty said.
The front door closed, and Edgar sauntered back into the room.
Old Mortimer has the wind up, doesn't he? Still, Nora's death has hit him pretty hard. He just told me that he had asked Titania for a divorce right before they came to the party. Had a huge fight in the elevator about it.
But they still came to the party together? Held by the woman he was having the affair with?
Kitty stared at her father in astonishment.
He said Titania seemed to think he was bluffing. They had already committed to being there, and he intended to go without her, but she insisted she attend. She can be a scary woman, Edgar said.
No wonder Titania slapped Nora in that case. Kitty couldn't believe her ears. She must have been so embarrassed by his behaviour, and everyone there knowing about what was going on.
It was rather awkward. I had a feeling there was going to be trouble when we arrived. I could tell by the look on Titania's face. As I said, she's quite fiery.
Edgar swapped his slippers for a pair of brogues and prepared to go downstairs to collect his newspaper. He let himself out of the apartment, and Kitty wondered if he would learn anything else about the murders while he was in the lobby. The snow had started to fall once again outside the apartment, and great white snowflakes spattered against the windows, blurring out the view.
I don't think we shall be going very far today, Matt said as he looked at the weather.
No, I think perhaps a quiet day after all the drama of this morning, Kitty agreed.
Edgar returned after a few minutes with his paper, but no fresh information. They passed the day quietly. Kitty read a book and did a jigsaw puzzle with Matt, while her father read his paper and listened to the news on the wireless. By late afternoon, the snow was still falling and it was dark outside. Kitty drew the dark green brocade curtains and switched on more lamps. They had been forced to turn some of them on just before dinner, since the cloud cover outside was so dense. There was another knock at the apartment door just as Kitty was thinking of setting the small circular oak table ready for dinner. They had chosen their meals from the daily menu, and the trolley would be sent up at 7. Edgar went to answer the door.
My dear Lieutenant Tanfield, this is an unexpected pleasure. Allow me to take your hat and coat. Do go on through.
Kitty heard her father greet the policeman, and she hastily tidied up the papers and books that were strewn about the furniture.
Captain Bryant, Mrs. Bryant, I thought I ought to call in and see you all.
The policeman took a seat on one of the armchairs and waited for Edgar to rejoin them.
Do you have news, Lieutenant? Kitty asked, once Edgar was resettled in his armchair.
The doc has confirmed that your husband's suspicions were correct. Peggy Marsh was killed with strychnine. It was in her tonic, which several people have told us she would often forget to take regularly. Apparently it was not unknown for her to suddenly remember and then just pour a dose and take it, the policeman said. So we can assume something woke her, or she was unable to sleep and suddenly remembered she had forgotten her tonic, Matt said. I think so, yes. We have also checked in with the pawn shops you mentioned to me. Mr. Blackstock identified a couple of items which Nora Briggs had said were still missing, so I sent an officer out to inquire.
Lieutenant Tanfield paused and looked at Matt. Kitty waited for the detective to say more. Had she and Matt been right about their suspicions that someone had been taking Nora's things and pawning them?
Did you discover anything? Matt asked.
We did indeed. The first shop, the one closest to Mr. and Mrs. Briggs' apartment, drew a blank. No record of anything fitting the items that Mr. Blackstock thought was still missing. However, the other shop was a different story.
Again, the detective paused for a moment before continuing.
Were the items there? Kitty asked. She was impatient to know if they had been right.
The lieutenant turned his gaze to Kitty.
Yes, both the missing items were there.
He made a show of consulting his notebook.
An engraved silver snuffbox, English, with a Chester hallmark and a silver figure of a swan, 2 inches tall, with a Birmingham hallmark. Quite distinctive items. I know that swan figure. Nora was very fond of it. She told me once that it was a memento from her honeymoon. They travelled around Europe, and her husband bought it for her after they had seen Swan Lake at the ballet. A very touching tale, Edgar said.
Kitty looked at her father, who suddenly seemed to realise he may have been better saying nothing at this point.
Did anyone at the shop have information on who had brought the silver in? Kitty asked.
She knew in England.
Usually, a ticket was issued so the items could be redeemed and the details entered in a ledger. This was often helpful should anything be proved stolen later on, although the address and name given were often false.
The shop records were unhelpful. Whoever pawned the items used a fake name and address. However, the assistant remembered the items being brought in,
Lieutenant Tanfield said. Did the description fit anyone we know? Kitty was impatient to discover if there might be a connection between the missing items and the murders. Knowing who had taken the silver from Nora's apartment could provide them with a vital lead.
The description the assistant gave was of a young woman, mid-twenties, well-spoken, pleasant appearance and nicely dressed. Light brown hair, wearing a dark grey lambskin coat and matching hat.
The detective said, reading from his notes.
That sounds like Peggy. She had a coat like that.
Edgar looked puzzled.
He said the young lady had been in several times before. On each occasion, she had different items, all small and silver. Usually, she redeemed them after a week or so, but a couple of times she let them slip. He assumed that she was on her uppers and needed the money for rent and bills, and when her pay came in, she fetched back whatever she could afford.
Lieutenant Tanfield glanced up from his notes. It was Peggy who was taking the silver then. But why? Kitty asked. The whole case was becoming more baffling by the minute. Chapter 11.
That's a very good question, Matt agreed.
Well, I'm no expert in these matters, obviously, but it sounds to me as if she may have had a bit of a gambling problem. I mean, I know of people who rely on borrowing a few bob from old Johnny Pawnbroker if they have a run of bad luck. Then they go and get the bally things back when a Gigi or a dog trots home.
Edgar attempted to maintain an innocent expression as Kitty gave him a hard stare.
Interesting.
Lieutenant Tanfield scribbled something in his notebook. Is there any evidence of something of that nature with Peggy? Kitty asked.
We are still making inquiries. This is all at an early stage in our investigation, Mrs. Bryant,
the policeman said.
I suppose the other reason could be if she were taking drugs of some kind,
Matt suggested.
Cocaine, perhaps, and needed money before she was paid. It can be a real problem in some places.
Lieutenant Tanfield nodded.
There was nothing found amongst her possessions to indicate either drug problems or gambling. The autopsy has only revealed evidence of strychnine, although some blood results are still to come in.
There is one other possibility I thought of, that perhaps she might have been doing this for someone else's benefit. Someone she loved, perhaps, who might need money urgently from time to time. A boyfriend or lover, or a family member, Kitty suggested.
Mr. Blackstock didn't know of any boyfriends, but Peggy does have an older brother, James, who lives in New York. My officers have been out to see him to break the news of his sister's death,
Lieutenant Tanfield confirmed. Kitty found this quite interesting. So Horatio had not suspected that perhaps Peggy and Rudolph may have been romantically involved. Perhaps she had been mistaken in what she had observed at the party. Then there was this new development of a brother. Could he have been the person Peggy was supplying with money? Times were hard, and she had seen articles in her father's newspaper about how many people were struggling to stay in their homes and get enough food. She and Matt had been donating money to various charities when they had been out and about in the city. Does he live far away from here? Kitty asked. New York was a big city, and she had not yet managed to sort out the geography of the place in her head. Despite the straight lines of many of the streets and the concept of the layout, it still seemed very alien compared to the villages she was more familiar with at home.
A mile or so away across town. He works as a car mechanic, the lieutenant said.
I see. Kitty wondered how well off Peggy's brother was. She presumed being a car mechanic must pay reasonably well. It was a skilled job, and since there were more motor vehicles on the streets now and less horses, he must be in demand. At least it seemed he was in employment. Lieutenant Tanfield stood and tucked his little black notebook away again in